हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावरीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So, page 49. According to their mode of worship, devotees of Brahma, Rudra, and other demigods attain the limited success of material opulences. Eventually, they may possibly become qualified for full liberation. Right? So full liberation will mean devotional service. Right? Liberation means that you're simply out of the material world temporarily. But full liberation means you actually develop love for Krishna and go to the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? That's full liberation, because that's complete. Any other kinds of liberation are only temporary. And then liberation from material distress and difficulties, that's even more temporary. Right? That's very, very quick. This same idea is echoed in the following Bajrang Bali Prabhu.
He's calling?
It appears so.
Pick it up if you want.
Hello.
We're kind of in the middle of a class.
I'll take a double cheese and order a frog. Okay. The same idea is echoed in the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23. Shrayamsi tatra kalau sattva tanor mrinam syuhu. Of these three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. Because the other ones, because of the particular modes that they're under, then it attracts a particular kind of personality under those same modes. And so, therefore, the amount of benefit one can get is limited. So since Vishnu can free you completely from the modes by situating you in goodness, that means he must be beyond goodness. Right? So that'll be pure goodness. So that's the whole point we're trying to establish, is that all these others, you get a temporary benefit, but from Vishnu you get a permanent benefit. Mm-hmm. That means he can't be of this world, because the world can't provide something it doesn't have. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the whole thing. Sutra Prakashika 118. What's Sutra Prakashika?
Illumination on the Sutra. It's the same format we're following in the Bhagavatam.
Oh, okay. Okay. So this is the opening. So that's the end of the last one.
Correct.
Okay. So in other words, we've established that Vishnu can't be just the supreme position in goodness within the material world. Right? He has to be beyond. Otherwise, why is it you get liberation from him? And the others, you only get temporary benefits.
Yes.
Right? So we're not meaning he's the lord of the mode of goodness simply because he's the only one that can do it. Because you have the lord of the mode of passion, the lord of the mode of ignorance. They can't do this aspect of being the lord of mode of goodness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then he can do it. That doesn't mean he's in goodness. It means he's in pure goodness. So if he's in pure goodness, goodness is easy.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Sutra Prakashika. 118. The one thing you might do is put it in the middle. That would then, it's a section rather than... I thought it was just a note. So it's like, okay. The Sutrakara Sri Vyasadeva has so far stated in this work that, 1, Brahman is the highest object of knowledge. 2. From Brahman proceeds the birth, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. 3. The scriptures alone are the means of knowing Brahman. And 4. Brahman alone is the chief object and final aim of all scriptures. Right? That's what we've been establishing all along. Mm-hmm. You know? And in this, then, this present Adhikarana, then is establishing that the Lord, who is that Brahman, he's beyond. Because otherwise some will say, yes, the impersonal aspect is Brahman, but the personal is not. So you're establishing, no, the personal is what's beyond. Right. And yeah, scriptures alone are the means, because otherwise we take it, our speculation is the means. Scriptures say one thing, but actually it's this. Prabhupada recommends this, but we do have this obscure thing over here. You know, what about this example? Krishna went to Gurukul, Ramachandra went to Gurukul, Prabhupada talks about Gurukul like that. But, you know, it appears that, Ashwatthama, he went to his own father's Gurukul, so actually you don't have to go somewhere else. See?
Yeah.
Isn't that? But what are we using here? Are we using scripture? Or are we using our own speculation? Because the scripture is saying this, the acharyas are saying this. In other words, scripture is saying, acharyas then are giving what's the meaning of it. And so then if we make our own meaning and say it's based on scripture, this is not what scriptures alone means. It means scriptures alone, not scripture is the basis of knowing, but, you know, it's scripture alone. You understand? So it's not our speculation, not all these processes. We use these processes to support what Shabda says. We don't use these processes to come up with our own idea. Because even if we want to do that, can you come up with 8,400,000? No. So if you're not that good, don't bother. Like that. So that was saying, you know, it's already done. You don't have to speculate. Yeah. For the remainder of this first pada, Vyasadeva will cite Upanishadic passages in detail and argue that the words therein refer in fact to the Supreme Brahman and not something else, such as the inert, insentient pradhan of the Shankyas, 115, the quote-unquote lower Brahman of the Maya bodies. Right? So we catch that. So the Shankyites, then, they are going to say that the pradhan is the actual source. That's the aspect of Brahman that we're talking about. You know, and that's the source of everything. But then the transcendental aspect of Brahman, that's beyond. But it's not personal. Or the Mayavadis, it'll be the lower Brahman. They'll accept, yes, Vishnu's Brahman, but he's the lower Brahman. That makes sense? So he's Vyasadeva, therefore, is defeating all these different aspects. Yes?
So as soon as you have higher Brahman and lower Brahman, you already got duality.
Yes, you already have duality. But they'll say the lower is all illusion, so it's not actually there. And so in this way, they feel in their own mind that they have solved that problem of duality. But it's still duality, because all you've done is shift it from lower Brahman to higher Brahman to illusion and Brahman. So you still end up with two. You know, so no matter what they think and what their intent, they're dualists, not monists, right? Because we're the ones that says, you know, there's only one subject, subject, one substance. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan are one thing. There's only one, like that, because it's all Krishna. But the point is we understand the personal aspect. They don't. But even their attempt at it, they're still coming from the material platform. Because when you have two like this, that you differentiate between the Lord and his energies, then it's material. Right? Because that's the whole basis of material consciousness, is that there's God, okay, you know, he may or may not be there, but then there's what we're interested in. So in any case, it's already two. On the spiritual world, then it's one. Because it's all about the Lord, right? But it's individuals who are worrying about the Lord. So therefore, the oneness is there. You see that, but it doesn't mean there's not relationship. That's the point of the Chinta Bheda Veda Tattva. Right? Because most other philosophies will take one position or another, and because they're all right, and then they'll just present that because it makes it very simple. But for Braja Bhakti, then you need a Chintaveda Veda Tattva because you have to be able to deal with these simultaneous differences. Because no one else deals with separation. Right? So that thing where it is Krishna, but there's a difference. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, let's say we're here and we see, Krishna is the ocean. Okay, now do we feel alone? You understand? Krishna's the ocean, so he's there. You know, he's that. You know, he's in the heart. He's, you know, he's all the things. So I don't. Where's the separation? The point is those in Shanta Rasa don't feel separation because everything's the Lord. You understand? But when you're dealing with it, all is the Lord, but at the same time, it's all different from the Lord. That's when you get the feeling of separation. Because it is Krishna, but it doesn't have the interaction of the personality. It's just his existence or presence or direction, organization. You know, it's connected with him, but it's not his desire. You know what I'm saying? Direct desire. Indirect desire, yes, the Lord created the world. There are certain laws, there are certain mechanics, there are certain duties. You follow them that does please the Lord. That's why people get benefit. But it's not from the principle that he is a person is pleased. You understand? That's an important difference because if this is not caught, we'll get stuck. You know, as nowadays it's very popular to profess all these getting stuck within the lower levels of bhakti as philosophies and claiming that they're all the same. Because the difference is that I'm following the rule, but who am I trying to please? Because I'm following the rule, I get the benefit. Like, let's say, would it be considered, you know, honest and okay that I'm doing this because it's a proper thing to do? Okay? Mm-hmm. Or, I'm doing this because by doing this, I get, you know, the sinful reactions in my heart get removed, I get purified. It's all okay. And in the beginning of devotional service, yes, it is okay. But we see in the stage of pure devotional service, that's not okay. Right? It's not that it doesn't happen. But what we're putting it is as a goal. I want to become purified. I want to follow the rules. I want to be situated in following the rules. You understand? It's a goal. But Krishna is the ultimate goal. So that means this goal has to be brought in line with the goal that it's just to please Krishna. That's the point, is that doing this activity, it's because it pleases Krishna, not because I'll become purified, I'll become freed from sinful reactions, because it's the right thing to do. It's because it pleases Krishna. That's why you have example, you know, extreme examples, but the one about Krishna's got a headache and he wants the dust from the feet of his devotees. Now, according to the rules, that's just not kosher, right? But we see and so many devotees that are working on these platforms, they're reluctant because it is against the rules, and the rules are created by the Lord. But then there's the person who's created the rules. That's another platform. So if we get stuck on this trying to show how what we're doing is all right because of attachments that we have, but we're connecting it to the Lord, that's fine. But the point is it pleases us. That's why we're doing it. It's pleasing Krishna because you're connecting it to him. And you become purified. I mean, if the demons get purified by remembering the Lord in enmity, why won't we get purified by connecting our activities to the Lord? So the point is you connect to the Lord, you benefit. But the point is that ultimately, is it about my benefit or is it about Krishna's benefit? This is the difference between all the things of karma yoga, jnana yoga, all the different things that are given in the last chapters of Gita, the technicalities of the modes of nature, how to understand divine and demoniac, and then sarva dharma parityaja. Okay. because before that is I'm taking what is my conditioned nature connecting to the Lord, which is totally bona fide. But what am I doing? The dharma of my nature, I'm engaging in the Lord's service. Right? But we're talking about, it's about the engagement in Krishna's service that's actually the focus. That's sarva dharma and parityaja. I'm giving up the religious consideration. Right? So it's about Krishna's pleasure, not about following the religion properly. Which is, of course, for pleasing Krishna. That's why it's considered better than following the religion, because it's good for ourselves. And then of course, if that's thrown out, making up our own religion just is not accepted. You know? I mean, unless you want to count yourself in, like with the demons, that, okay, they're connected to Krishna, but we have to remember the demons are an advantage. Because 24/7 they're remembering Krishna. Well, we only remember when we want to prove what we're doing is okay. You know, so we're not even up to their standard if we make our own program up. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is the point. Scriptures alone are the means of knowing Brahman. But they're the means. Because why? Because Krishna made it that way. So it's not about our jnana. It's about following it so that it pleases Krishna, that he reveals himself. Right? Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Then we can understand Brahman alone is the chief object and final aim of scriptures. Right? So it's actually about Krishna and the final aim. So as we mentioned before, these aspects of karma yoga and jnana yoga, these are steps on the way to the final goal of simply pure devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. In this sutra, Sri Vyasa continues to debunk the Advaita school's stubborn insistence that there exists an instrumental Saguna Brahman whose worship must eventually be discarded in favor of a higher Brahman. So even they have some kind of concept of Sarva Dharma and Parityaja, just as totally misplaced. Yes. Like that. Vyasa insists that nowhere in scriptures does it advocate abandoning Brahman in order to attain something higher. Because right? Mm-hmm. it doesn't distinguish like this. Yeah. When the Shastras talk about Brahman, it doesn't say that there's two Brahmans. Yeah. It never says that. It says that they're, the living entity and the Lord are the same and non-different. That it says. But it never says there are two Brahmans. Yes. So the Brahman it's talking about is only one Brahman. So giving up that Brahman for something higher, then that's not mentioned. Mm-hmm. So that must mean that since the Brahman understanding alone is a lower level of realization than the personal, that must mean what we're giving up is the lower level of that realization. But that superior must be Brahman. The personal must be Brahman.
Maharaj, and what do they mean by saying that?
Who?
Advaita school.
Like saying, because that way then they're God. Because if Vishnu is supreme, then they're never going to be supreme. There's no, how you say, opportunity. But if Vishnu's lower Brahman, and then the Nirguna, Saguna is the lower, and Nirguna is the higher, that means they have a shot at being God.
Right? That's strange.
Yeah, so yeah, it is. But I mean, just saying, in other words, there's the fair thing is that, you know, everybody participates, and whoever's the best, then they win. Then there's the thing of preliminary politics to make sure that you're the only one left. Right? So they're just using that, you know, standard, how you say, you know, high school politics on who becomes the prom king and queen, right? You know, so it's you know, it goes on everywhere.
Has many applications.
Yeah, so say you don't have to be an intellectual to use this method, but, you know, so.
It helps if you're not.
Huh?
It helps if you're not.
Yes. Sutra 118. Heyatva vachanachcha. Heyatva, worthy of being abandoned. Vachanat, because of statements. Cha, also. The Lord does not have material qualities, because statements to that effect would make the Lord an inferior object. Right? Hmm. So we're saying that there is Saguna Brahman. He has all qualities. So, but that means it cannot be material qualities. That's the definition. Does that make sense? Because otherwise they'll say he has qualities, and qualities means material. No. Qualities can be either spiritual or material. It's consciousness that makes the two. See, they're still absorbed in a secondary aspect. That's the forms, that's the activity. That's what makes it spiritual. That's what's hard about understanding. No, it's the devotion that makes it spiritual. The activity is not is spiritual. It's engaging in the Lord's service that makes it spiritual. Right? So that's the focus. That's the primary. But because from the material platform, we're so used to looking at things from the secondary that it's the position, it's the existence, the activities. That's what's the main point. That's what makes it spiritual and material. Right? That's why then, because we have that mentality, that's why Shastra gives recommendations of what to do and not to do. Right? So what's recommended is standard what they basically do in the spiritual world. Because by following that, then you'll at least be doing what they're doing, even though you don't have the mentality. Then with time, we'll develop the mentality. Right? Does that make sense? That's the idea of it. So when we say give it up, we mean give up this idea where you take secondary, which is the Dharma, and apply that as main, and we shift to the primary, which is the devotion. Right? Does that make sense? Because Dharma is, what's the form of it, what's the nature of it, what it can do. Right? Does that make sense? That's Dharma. So then that's why we're coming forward into this. So that's a higher principle. Right? Because then it's like, what does Shastra say? That establishes the Dharma. If we're simply going by pratyaksha, our senses, then that's a different thing altogether. That's why arts and sciences can be all the way down on the lower level. We say, oh no, in the Krishna book it gives the arts and sciences, the 64 arts. Why isn't it just arts? Because, okay, arts are, you know, with the senses or with the shudras or like this. So why does it say sciences? Because sciences that only establish the workings of the senses means you have the art, but that art is based on a science. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then it's just down on that level of pratyaksha. That's the actual position. That's why scientists, modern scientists, they're on that platform of pratyaksha, on the platform of anamoya. They only understand how to use the senses to perceive the world. And if they can't perceive it with their senses, it doesn't exist. You know, it's just like an animal. The sense can perceive it, it's real. The sense doesn't perceive it, it's not real. Right? And that basically comes down to what they like and don't like. So the dog sniffs it, he likes it, he eats it. He sniffs it, he doesn't like it, he doesn't eat it.
But they think they're very intelligent, and you can't see intelligence. There's no intelligence atom. So how does that work from their point of view?
From their point of view, then their position really doesn't exist, because they're claiming it's intelligent, and they're so intelligent. But the point is how is it perceived? Yeah. You know? Like that. So that's the point. So if they say it's because of math, but anything can be made by math. Mm-hmm. So then why don't they accept the mind? Yeah. You know? Like that. So it's
probably because
it's the same as the Mayavadis, is that you use your intelligence up to a point, and then after that point you stop using it, because it's actually not about intelligence, it's about fulfilling a desire.
Yeah,
it's not about being intelligent. So it's not about coming to what is the absolute truth, it's what do I prefer to be the absolute truth. So that's why we say mental speculators can never actually know, because it's what they prefer. It's always subjective. So all intellectuals are subjective. It's just at which point they stop being objective and being subjective. So the higher you take your objectivity, the higher they consider they are, but they always end in subjectivity. Like that. So, okay. Okay, yes, no material quality. So the spiritual qualities are there. That's the main aspect that we're establishing. How to differentiate that. So that's the point that we have to do. We have to be able to distinguish between material and spiritual. That's the whole point. That's what Bhagavatam is taking us through. Mm-hmm. Now it's already mentioned in the first verse. But then we'll expand on that and then basically take 9 cantos to take us through to that point. Until 10th canto, then it should be ones approaching that from the platform of pure devotion. Right? So that's that element is introduced with Prahlad Maharaj. Means it's always been there, but just practically applied then with Prahlad Maharaj. Because you could say, no, he's the son of the king, he's the emperor, he could do so much there. You know, why is he messing it up by, you know, talking all this philosophy and Krishna consciousness with his father? It would be so much easier if he just, you know, went along and learned all these things and then ran the kingdom nicely and then, you know, like this way, then he can have influence on Krishna consciousness. Right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But we see as that was already done in the first 6 cantos. Now we're showing is that is the way to do it, but what do those people that are doing that, what is actually their mentality? Like Prahlad Maharaj. So they could do like Prahlad Maharaj. Remember, Priyavrata could sit out in the forest and not engage in any mundane activities. Any social, economic, you know, any of these. And he was very happy. But if need be, then he came and he took up the duty because it was necessary. Does that make sense? From authority, not from ourselves. Okay? So then you do that. So if authority wants, then yes, then that's consideration. But we have to be very, very careful there. Is that it's about this primary position of Krishna in the transcendental qualities, not the engagement of the secondary material qualities. Because the difference is in the consciousness, as we said. Right? So then if we say, okay, it's about that consciousness, that higher consciousness, then the lower doesn't matter. But then by whose opinion doesn't it matter? Because Krishna says, perform your duties. Where are those duties done? That's established by scriptures. With knowledge, right? Then you're remembering him. That will connect it. But what's the most essential point is you're doing it to please Krishna. Right? Because otherwise the demons are remembering Krishna, not to please Krishna. But they're getting benefit. They get liberated. They get all material facility. Why is it that Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, you know, Shishupal, you know, are you know, basically you could say filthy rich. Right? Because they're connecting to the Lord. But they're not doing it favorably for the Lord. Therefore, it doesn't get them the ultimate full, liberation. It only gets them material facilities and liberation. This is the subtlety between. We have to be able to go across. That's why the secondary is important and useful simply as a means. But it's not the ultimate goal. Just like Shastra is the means, it's not the ultimate goal. Right? Some of them say, you know, studying, being a pundit is the ultimate goal. It's not. It's about pleasing Krishna. So this aspect, we have to be able to distinguish. Otherwise, then we'll put too much emphasis on. Because if it says it's about the primary, not the secondary, then we can't say, oh, therefore we don't need this secondary, we can use that secondary. Then what is it actually about?
Secondary.
It's about the secondary, totally. And we're only using the philosophy to cover up that fact. So in other words, we should not use the philosophy to establish ourselves in lower levels of bhakti, in obstruction to higher levels, the higher level of bhakti of being pure. We have to be very careful about that. That's why then we have to interpret as the acharyas give us. We can't make up our own system. Because otherwise, all the 6 schools of Vedic philosophy are based on the Shastra. Right? That's actually what it's based on. And they all accept that there's a supreme. But in none of those schools is it about the pleasure of the Supreme. It's about their own benefit in either karma or gyan that they'll get from doing what they like, according to Shastra, and in line with the Supreme. You understand? So we're trying to learn the difference there. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's the meaning of this level of the study. How to understand that difference. Right? Because that's what, yeah, certainly sense, yeah. Okay. Sri Govindavasya. If the creator of the universe was characterized by material gunas to give him qualities, the scriptures would also mention in teaching sadhana that this Lord, the object of their worship, is inferior. But it never does that. It always talks about, it talks about the inferiority of the material world and the superiority of the Lord, of bhakti, of things connected to him. Right? It never mentions that at some point you give it up. The Mayavadis, that's a very major part of their philosophy. Is that you follow all this, but you're going to give it up. But where does scripture ever say that? It never does. So that's why we say they've got this, their authority for this comes from Buddhism, not actually from the scriptures. Right? Like the men and women of... that the Lord, the object of their worship, is inferior like the men and women of this world. But the scriptures do not say this. Rather, he is glorified as worthy of worship by persons desiring liberation, so that they can rid themselves of material gunas. The scriptures describe the Lord to be different from entities covered by the gunas. Anya vacho vimuchata. Give up speaking of everything except Brahman. Mundaka Upanishad 2.25. The Lord, though the creator of the universe, like, you know, we were saying, you know, always think about Krishna, remember him in the past times and this and that. But that's the basis in the Upanishads. It says, give up speaking about everything except Brahman. So in other words, give up speaking about anything else that's not connected to Krishna. So it's the connection to Krishna that's important. But at the same time is, what's our attachment to that which we're using? Are we attached to it because of our conditioning, our own desires, or because this is what's recommended? Right? Because if it's about Krishna's pleasure, then what would he like? You know? Mm-hmm. Rather than what I'd like to give. You understand? Mm-hmm. What would he like? Then within what he likes, because he's unlimited, then there's plenty of choices for... Yes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I have a question. Tuning into this, knowing what Krishna likes, is that something that comes from the heart?
It's something that comes from the Shastra. Scriptures alone are the means of knowing Brahman.
But like you're saying, it's like...
No. You understand? Okay. Because if it doesn't start from scripture and then based on that, then you contemplate it within the heart and then there's an understanding. But if you just start from the heart and what you feel like, people go out into the forest and what they feel like, they're, you know, taking off their clothes and playing on ocarinas and dancing around the out around the bonfire. You know, like that. That's, they feel like that.
Feels great.
So my next question is, I was wondering, I did talk
about the higher stage. Most people won't play ocarinas, dance around the fire, or take off their clothes. So on that platform, just what's the heart, that was the highest principle you could get to.
Okay.
Right? You understand? Otherwise, then there's what scriptures recommend. Right? And we never see this as a recommendation. Strange, but it's somehow or another not recommended.
They must have skipped that.
Yeah, they must have skipped. Did we miss a chapter here?
There. If you want to become a leprechaun in your next life, that's...
Yeah, of course. Leprechaun sadhana.
Right? Yeah, leprechaun sadhana.
Yeah, okay. Like that. Okay. Therefore, so... Those desiring liberation, they're worshiping the Lord. So if the Lord is something lower, how are they going to get liberation from that? So that must means he's beyond the gunas, and those who want to become beyond the gunas worship that Lord. Right? So like that, yeah. Therefore, the Lord is described as being devoid of the material gunas, but endowed with spiritual qualities. So we understand that's the principle. So when we say saguna and nirguna, then we mean nirguna means he's without material qualities. Saguna means he's with spiritual qualities. So we're not talking about a position. We're talking about a nature.
So nirguna is actually looking at the same thing from a lower perspective. Saguna is looking at the same thing
from a higher perspective, yes. But on the material world, things have their nirguna. But you'll say the soul, though, is without those gunas, yeah. Right? He doesn't have. It means we have the conditioning; it has qualities, but the soul doesn't have those qualities. So in that way, we're looking at it as nirguna. But the point is on that transcendental platform, what's the nature of the soul with qualities? But the problem: we're not using the spiritual qualities; we're using the material. That's the difficulty. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay, Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23. The transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance. And just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction, he accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. Footnote 43. Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport the difference between demigods covered by gunas and the transcendental Supreme Lord. Lord Vishnu is worshipped by devotional service only, and if anyone has to continue prison life in the material world, he may ask for relative facilities for temporary relief from the different demigods like Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Varuna. No demigod, however, can release the imprisoned living being from the conditioned life and material existence. Like someone's in the prison, the modern prisons, and you have all the different gangs that are there. So, therefore, you can take shelter of one of these gangs. And then by that, you can get some basic facilities and relieve some of the misery of, you know, how you say, prison life. But can any of those gang leaders get you out of the prison? Yeah. He's not by any legal method. You understand? All analogies have a limitation.
They're calculating.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they're not calculating. But the point is they're never actually out. Because even if they go out, they're still criminals. So they haven't actually left the prison. In other words, prison is the natural place for criminals. So even if a criminal leaves the prison, it doesn't mean he's still not a criminal. So he doesn't actually belong outside, he belongs in the prison.
So it's like in personal liberation, it's not actually...
Yeah, no, you don't quite get out. This can be done only by Vishnu. Therefore, the ultimate benefit may be derived from Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23 purport. Done. Yes.
In the divisions of faith, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, I've heard some devotee scholars explain that the Muslim faith is really covertly worship of Lord Shiva, you know, the crescent moon, and supposedly in the Kalab there's supposed to be a Shiva linga there. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but they say. And then some people say that, some devotee scholars say that Christianity is covertly Brahma worship. So I just
wanted to... And what do they give as the...
The creator. Lord Brahma is, you know, they look at God, the major feeling toward God is of that.
Oh, okay, creation. No, there is an aspect of that.
Yeah. So that's what I'm just saying.
There's a name for that. Yeah, no, but they also, some get into the difference that the God that's talked about in the Bible within God, Garden of Eden is not the highest level.
Yeah.
Like that. They have a name for it. Stuff like that. They get weird. Yeah. You can, because the point is everything's going to come back to these three anyway. But to say that it's specifically that, you know, it's just like any philosophy that anybody's talking will fit elements of what they're talking about, they'll be derived from these six schools. but it's not necessarily that they're representative of a school like that. But all their arguments come from that, which particular mixture they make, that makes their own unique, you know, kind of thing. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they'll be saying one thing and you add in some little bit of something else, then, you know, you add a little bit of the Shiva aspect into these Brahma aspect that you got, and you get the Rastafarians, you know. So it's just like that. It's just all they're doing is taking the same ingredients and mixing it, because that's all the world is, only the Lord anyway. So they can only derive from these elements. So if you want to look at that, but the point is looking at that is then how are you going to address so that they understand about the Supreme. So if you're starting from that element of the Shiva and then bringing him to there, Brahma, and bringing him to there. But just to identify, it's nice, but you have to take it further into how it'll be applied. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. No, but that's they don't like, but it depends upon who they are.
There are some different schools.
No.
They were fighting each other, but the ultimate thing is that they just.
Yeah.
She was the first one.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Ancient Chinese, they worship Vishnu. So they call it Fushi.
Fushi?
Yeah, actually it's Vishnu. So can we call them Vaishnava?
But what's their point? You can say Vaishnava from the point is that worshippers of Vishnu, but the point is would they be counted within the context of the pure devotee Vaishnavas or the Apasampadaya Vaishnavas? You understand? What's the point of worshipping Fushi?
Mainly it's for the flourishing of society.
Yes, okay. So that is like what we see is the Mimamsakas, they worship also Vishnu. Means they have five groups. So one group worships Vishnu. So amongst themselves, they would consider their Vaishnavas. Or like the caste Goswamis, they consider themselves Vaishnavas. But there's some other element that's in there that we wouldn't count them within pure bhakti. You know what I'm saying? So, it will be because they have an connection there with Vishnu. Then we'll use that as the starting point, but try to bring them to pure bhakti. But just to say is, no, we don't say anything that they're okay the way they are, then they're not. Does that make sense? Because the mentality.
Maybe they're not pure devotees, but they are in some sense.
In some ways, you can say so many things. But the point is no. But what's your point? Okay, let us just take this. Let's go back to this. Why? What is the need in calling them Vaishnavas?
Vaishnava is the follower of Vishnu.
I know, but what's the need for you to? Why do you, as an individual, want to identify them as Vaishnavas? How does what satisfaction do you gain in that?
Then I can connect the connect Chinese culture to Krishna consciousness.
Okay, and then what's the point of doing that?
That people get uplifted.
And why will they get uplifted?
Because then they can understand the whole meaning of.
Okay, is Vishnu. And then why, what's the point of having that? Why do you want to have that, you know, understanding and upliftment?
Then people know the goal of life.
And that goal of life is?
Vishnu.
And what aspect of Vishnu?
Then they believe Vishnu approves you stay in the post.
Fushi stays in the pole star. Okay, so then we're talking about Paramatma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so do we leave it at Paramatma or Hiranyagarbha? Is that where we leave it? Now, if there's a pole star, is there anything beyond the pole star? Yeah, so Fushi and the pole star, then, you know, is there another, how do you say? Is there a Fushi beyond? Is there a Mahafushi? Okay. Does that make sense? So do we just leave it there and that's it? We stop?
We should do that.
Yeah, that's the whole point. And what are their methods of worshipping this Fushi?
Merely by, you know, perform duties.
Okay, yeah. Perform duties. Yeah. And who establishes sacrifice. The duties?
Duties and sacrifice.
Okay, but yeah. Who establishes the duties?
Fushi himself.
And how do they know that Fushi, you know, has established that they should go out, work hard, and get themselves an iPhone 7?
Through their scriptures, like teaching.
Okay, so they're using the same. There, okay. So then, but in those, it's basically talking about the performance of the duty. But is there any discussion about the actual consciousness and connection with Fushi?
Some, not very, very systematic.
No. So therefore, then what was Narad Muni's opinion on a non-systematic scripture? How you say that doesn't bring that out?
It's a pilgrimage for crows.
Yeah. In other words. People read the Mahabharata and stay total materialists. So people read I Ching and stay total materialists. Right? Yeah. So how to change that? In other words, then how you say, the Srimad Bhagavatam would be the natural commentary on I Ching. So you have to take them farther. So just that they're there, that's not, okay, they're there, okay, then leave it alone, we're good. You know, it's got to go beyond that. So you can say the roots are there, and this is there. So we can see it that aspect was there, and in time that's been lost, right?
Yeah.
So you can use that, but you have to take them back to the original, because previously also among scholars is that something's in Chinese, yes, but for the philosophical and the basis of it had to be in Sanskrit. Yeah, if you go back in time, people knew the Sanskrit. No?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Even in Japan, there was one of the Buddhists there. Then there's six different schools, and then he got established and accepted by the king. He took everything back to the Sanskrit, and the Vishnu was a person. You know, and that he's supposed to be worshipped. So he's the highest Buddha. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it's understood, it goes back to there, not that, oh, it's, you know, it's Chinese, that's good enough. You know, why is China glorious? Because it's based on this original culture. That's the glory of it. You know. Well, it somehow or another never mentions that one, doesn't it? Can't remember. Brought it forth upon this, a great nation. Dedicate. I don't know. Yeah, you know the one I'm talking about. Not the one where I dedicated the one I love, not that one.
Although that's a good one, too.
Yeah, our forefathers. Yeah, it's one of those famous talks. So, but they don't mention about, you know, the Vedic culture and the origin and Vishnu and all that like that. So, you know. Does that make sense? So there's a weakness there. So you have to take it through, is that here's something more, it's more obvious, but still unless you take it through, if you just leave it that it's good enough, then in the name of soft preaching, then you do no preaching. Because the point is in soft preaching, technically, what do we need you for? You know, because they're already doing yoga, so what do we need the devotee going there for? Because they're already doing it, they're already great. So Fushi is already there. Why do we need you to go around and... You know what I'm saying? So unless you can take it further, there's no meaning to it.
Yeah.
So in other words, there's preaching. Does that make sense? Huh? Fushinavas.
That sounds pretty good.
Fushinavas.
Fushivadas.
Okay. We'll move on.
Sounds like a good idea.
Okay. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.15. Dhruva Maharaj said, "My Lord, by your unbroken transcendental glance, you are the supreme witness of all stages of intellectual activities." Right? He's the witness. So that means we're thinking all these things, but we don't get to him because he's the witness. Because if he wasn't the witness, that means we could actually, then he would be encompassed within our thought. But he's the witness, that means he's always outside, because you're a witness means you're outside of it. Right? So he's the witness. He's outside of our intellectual, you know, thought.
That's why we cannot grab him?
Yes, that's why, yes, with the intelligence, the mind, you cannot, you know, catch him. You are eternally liberated. Your existence is situated in pure goodness, and you are existent in the supersoul without change. So eternally liberated, that means there's not a time when he becomes lower Brahman. Right? He's always liberated. That's the position. And your existence, super soul, without change. So it's not that by extending into everything, he changes. Mm-hmm. Right? Because when Shiva comes into the universe, he changes from Sadashiv to Rudra. By one who's beyond the modes and one who's affected by the modes. Right? Brahma is automatically affected. You know, that's... Yeah. You are the original personality of Godhead, full with six opulences, and you are eternally the master of the three modes of material nature. You are always different from the ordinary living entities. As Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe, and yet you stand aloof and are the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. So he's doing everything, but at the same time he's aloof. That's the point. Through his energies, through his expansion, he gets everything done. But he, as a person, in other words, say it's all Krishna doing it, but then what is aloof? I mean, his personality is aloof. He's doing this because it needs to be done. Right? Just like mother's going into the bedroom, picking up all the toys and putting them in the box and everything else and picking it up. But does that mean she's involved in that?
Sometimes.
That's another thing. You know what I'm saying? She's beyond that. That's why she can pick it all up. Because if she was that, then everything's fine. You know what I'm saying? The whole rest of the house would look like that. You know, just I mean, think about it. If actually you took up a lifestyle like that, where everything's everywhere... Think of all the money you'd save on furniture. You know, cabinets, this thing, that, because all that's to keep things nicely. But if you can just spread everything all over the floor and everything, you don't need any furniture. Plus, it gives you more floor space to spread things out. Mm. You know, and then you don't have to worry about, you know, playing cricket in the living room. You're going to break anything because there's no furniture to break. Right? Does that make sense? You know, and pants and undies on the floor don't care if you play cricket on top of them. Right?
You should write a book.
Yeah. See?
Save on clothing because there's limited space.
Limited space.
You cannot buy two.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't have the closet space, you don't need hangers, you don't like that. Yeah. Okay, footnote 44. Dhruva Maharaj in this verse carefully points out the differences between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities. In the next verse, he further distinguishes the Lord from his impersonal effulgence, Brahman, the immediate cause of the material manifestation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that one's ability to perceive these distinctions is directly proportionate to one's bhakti. So that's the important point, is that it's according to bhakti, not according to intelligence. Because we'll think, no, I'm intelligent. That's the problem in the modern, is one feels one has, how you say, intellectually developed. And so that's why I can understand it. But actually, many times it's not. That's not what makes it. It's the advancement devotional service. Directly proportionate to one's bhakti, yes.
Intelligent means surrender to Krishna.
Intelligent, yes, surrender to Krishna. So that's intelligence. So that's why Prahlad Maharaj is the most intelligent. We could say, hey, he's just a 5-year-old kid, and you have all those other personalities there who have been around a bit longer, right? You know, Brahman, most of them have been around, he's the 7th generation, right? So they've been around for much longer. But because of his bhakti, that's why he's the highest.
Lakshmi has been around for a while.
Yeah, Lakshmi also has been around a while, even before Brahma. And, yeah, like that.
Right. In what sense, Brahman is the immediate cause of the material manifestation?
The example is given of the field. You grow things on the field, you get all the variety of manifestation, so it's all just the field. But at the same time, it's different from the field. It's made up of the field. So Brahman is all the unlimited qualities that there are in things. All the mechanics of how things work. And so then the material nature is just made up of that. See, because we have this idea that Brahman means nothing. But Brahman means everything. But the point is it's not specific. That's what makes it Brahman. When we say impersonal, we mean generic. We generally think impersonal means nothing. So we're polluted by the nirvisesh shunyavad. Yes. And generally our nirvisesh comes from shunyavad.
Yeah.
Like that, because it was around longer than any of our philosophies on the matter. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is it is made up of all qualities. Like if I say, the pillars, it's a generic quality. Or I talk about how pillars work. Let's say an engineer, he knows how to create a column. But is that specific or that's generic? The knowledge he has is generic of how columns work. That's impersonal. That's Brahman. So people that know things, they actually know things on this level of Brahman. How much they know, that's how much the Lord reveals according to their endeavor, their karma. Right? So only the devotee actually knows the Lord. He knows what's beyond. So if for the materialist, if only what the Lord reveals, he knows. So the devotee, then he knows more because he knows the Lord. So that means automatically a devotee has more knowledge than the person who's working in the field. He may know some of the technical mechanics of it, but actually what it is, how it is Brahman. He knows Brahman, but he doesn't know that what he knows is Brahman. The devotee knows what he knows is Brahman. Therefore, the devotee knows more than this educated person does. So that's where we can help. As far as, how thick the rod should be or how, this and that, you just get that guy to figure out because he knows that. But what your building is for, that he has no idea. He can build a bridge, but what the bridge is for, does he know that? No, no idea. He can build a house. He doesn't know what it's for. People live in it, people drive cars across it. But why are they driving? Why are they living? That he can't explain. That's why someone who's intelligent on the material platform, it's limited what they know. They have some skills, but the point is knowing what that's for, the result to please Krishna, that they don't know, that they need to be educated in. So,
it's very powerful preaching because you add a dimension to something they already are attached to.
Yes.
They don't want to discuss the nuts and bolts, they already know that, but if you can give a little more about the depth, it's like it blows their mind.
Yeah, no, that's the point is that to talk to professionals, you actually need to be able to discuss philosophy that we're studying now. When it's like, no, you don't want to disturb them, don't talk about this, because for most devotees, Krishna consciousness means the secondary aspect. If you're wearing a dhoti, that's devotional. If you're not, it's that, and so then there's a problem because we don't want to introduce that, we don't want to scare them away. So, but the whole thing is that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about philosophy. And if they actually, we say they're intelligent. Oh, but the intelligent people would be scared away. It says, no, the intelligent people, they're the ones who'll be attracted. they'll catch, wow, this is something solid. You know, I've learned so much, but I've never heard this. So that's the whole point, is that's what we're talking about. This, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. You're talking very briefly about all these people were there a long time before Prahlad Maharaj made his appearance on the scene. A question I always wonder about is, why is it that the pastimes are so confusing in terms of tattva? For example, Lord Shiva appears from Lord Brahma, or that all the demigods are there, and then Lakshmi makes her appearance in this creation from the churning of the ocean of milk. So it gets very confusing. Why is the pastime of their appearance seems like Lord Brahma would be more superior to Lord Shiva, or all the demigods would be superior to Lord to Lakshmi Devi because she appears from the ocean of milk. So it gets, that's the question I have, is why does the...
No, but just on that side thing, just we'll get to the main point. But on the side point, is she appeared from the ocean of milk. So is the ocean of milk there before the demigods?
No, the ocean of milk is there. Yes, the ocean of milk.
Okay, but so she's part of that. It's just a matter of by churning she manifests. Okay. It's just like butter is already there in the milk, but by churning you can see it.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry that she's not, you know, older than them. But the point is that because we function in time and space, therefore things are defined so that we can relate to them in time and space. Right? And it also gives a context to those in the spiritual world where there is no time and space. So when they refer to things, the residents of the spiritual world, they refer to them in the context of here. Like that. So that it gives a context for the pastimes. So they follow things like they do here. So, Goloka is the higher position, Gokul is the lower position on situation, but they're exactly the same. But the discussions in Goloka are according to the activities in Gokula. This is what's not readily appreciated. Right? Because the point is as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, is that if you just appear in Goloka without going to Gokul first, and you bump into somebody, they haven't seen you before, so then they ask you, who are you, where are you from, what are you going to say?
I'm a follower of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, that's what I would say.
Yeah, okay, nice.
Huh?
Nice, but the point is you have to fit into the community. Everybody has a home somewhere, they have parents, they have a community, therefore it sets their duties, their relationships, how will that be established? You understand? So that's why Gokul is there, then you're born in a particular family, you know, you're from this village, you're from that village, and you know, like that. So then there's something to talk about. You understand? So the context is there. So that makes sense. So that's why these things go on, because then they can relate like that. Because they for the present thing here, they'll relate to the other things, other pastimes, other activities. So they don't just stay within that. Like we mentioned, the gopis, when they're upset with Krishna's behavior with the girls, you know, he gets too haughty or something. Then they complain that he doesn't know how to deal with girls. And then he'll say, you know, what do you mean? And they'll say, well, you know, as Ramachandra, you cut off Suparnika's nose. You know, she was just a girl and she approached you and you cut off her nose. So that just shows you don't know how to behave. Right? So they use all these other pastimes as context for the one that they're in. Does that make sense? So that's why it's used. Now, this is the real space and time continuum.
So, So, just so I make sure I understand, so Lakshmi appears from the ocean of milk.
Well, she has to appear from somewhere. I mean, it's other, it was that, or you know, be one of those, you know, in the little plastic thing inside a box of Cracker Jacks. So they went with the ocean of milk, much more glorious. And all that.
So she appears from the ocean of milk, but that becomes a relishable fact for the residents of the spiritual world.
Because that'll be one of her names and things like that. Yes. So it works here; it attracts us, and that same attraction goes there.
So therefore, if I'm following you correctly, then the pastimes in Gokul or the pastimes of these different spiritual personalities in the material world...
No, but they're never in the material world. It's situated here, right, so that we can see it. In other words, that's the prakat pastimes. The apricot we can't see.
Okay.
You understand? When you're qualified to function in Goloka, then you can take part in the apricot, whether they're there or here. The prakat is what is manifest so that we can get, you know, the prakat pastimes are, you know, the basis of the things.
Okay, so let me try again. So she eternally appears from the ocean of milk, and this,
yes,
on occasions we just see it here in,
yeah,
the material world.
That's
okay.
It. That's it. Because so that, therefore she's known, she'll have a name. You know, mentioning
she
that.
Who appears from the ocean.
Yes, like that. Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying they'll be like that. You know, appears from, is the resident of, is the, you know, dear to. You know, there'll be so many like that. So in her, you know, thousands of names or unlimited names. So these will be. You know.
Okay. Can we say that Brahma is lead?
Brahma is the lead.
Yeah.
Lead meaning as in. Lead singer, lead actor, you know, lead dancer, lead, or it means when you take off the guitar and plug it in the amp as the lead.
He's the mechanic.
Mechanic.
Yeah.
What mechanic? No, you want to connect I Ching to Brahma, and then Vishnu is that based on that. So actually, Brahma is the main thing. Fushi was the main thing here.
In Brahma, there's all the qualities and the mechanics.
He deals with the secondary, but where did they come from? What does he base it on? Prabhupada says he's an engineer. Where does the engineer do his work from? He already has a blueprint. The blueprint's the primary creation. That's what's then kept in the lotus. So based on that, then he creates the universe. The primary creation has already happened before Brahma. That's already happened on the primary level, basically on the level of Karana Dakshai Vishnu, right? Because he's the cause. Then that's expanded into each universe as Garbha Dakshai, and those primordial demigods come along with. But Brahma manifests what we can see. In other words, the primordial demigods, they're the ones that are associates of Garbha Dakshai, you know, and Karana Dakshai Vishnu, or Kiru Dakshai Vishnu. They're Vishnu's associates. But what we see, those are someone else. Right? So there is a Varuna demigod that's in charge of the water that 14 times in a day of Brahma has changed. But there's an original Varuna as a demigod who eternally stays with the Purusha avatars. Understand? And this Varuna is based on that Varuna. And that Varuna is just a manifestation of a particular energy of the Lord, you know, according to the mandala. Does that make sense?
Makes sense, and it's very far out.
Yeah. Yeah. You understand? And that's based on, then goes, keeps going back to the pastimes in the spiritual world. That's why we say the descending process. It starts there, it comes here, and if we want to take what we're doing here and try to make that go up, it may get stuck at some point. That's why it's dangerous to take the secondary as important as will be taken. See, we take it as important only and it manifests the primary. But because the primary is about pleasing Krishna, and you please Krishna through the manifestation of forms, through activity and knowledge, then an attitude. So then the point is then what particular forms does Krishna prefer? Because we say, oh, we're from the West, so we prefer this. But, okay, fine. But what does Krishna prefer? And what Krishna prefers, that will just, you know, just set aside and just say, well, that's just an ethnicity of the great wide world. And, of course, it must be an inferior ethnicity to the local Western ethnicity that I'm attached to. You know what I'm saying? The point is, what is ethnicity? It's what is the interest or desire or needs of the individual. So when you have a group of them together, then you say that's an ethnicity. Right? So the point is ultimately it's about Krishna's ethnicity. So how he likes, in other words, the devotion is the main thing. That's the primary. But he does have the mediums through which he appreciates that devotion is expressed. That's what Shastra defines. And if we can follow that here, why wouldn't we? Because it's the preferred ethnicity. Because it's Krishna's. But if we can't do that, it's not available, then we take at least the principle of it and apply it the best we can. But if we throw it out saying, oh, that's just Indian, then what is our motive? Is it actually devotion? Is it actually about Krishna? Or is it simply about holding on to our attachments and trying to cover up our attachments by adding some spurious philosophy? You know, does that make sense? That's the meaning of sophistry. Sophistry is you're taking something bogus and trying to make it into something looking good. You understand? So we have to be very, very careful, because it may follow similar forms, but we have to know what form applies where. You know, screwdrivers have a handle and they're kind of long and pointed, so are potato peelers. So does that mean the potato peelers are a screwdriver? No. Or a screwdriver is a potato peeler? No, one has to have discrimination. That's intelligence. Right? So one has to have both, the ability to tell what's the same, but also the ability to tell what's different. And we can't just use them as we please. This one I'll show the similarity, because the difference will go against what I'm saying. And this other thing I'll show the difference, because the similarity will go against what I'm thinking. It should be that it proves itself on both. You understand? Or at least, if not, it's in the context of what the acharyas give. For the purpose that the acharyas give it. In the mood that they give it. So that's the thing we have to be able to tell very nicely here. Otherwise, then we won't actually get up to the standard of, you know, transcendental understanding. You know, let alone seventh canto, we don't even catch, you know, the second chapter. We don't even catch first chapter, because there at least Arjuna is talking about duties according to Varnashram. So if we reject Varnashram, then we have to start before the Gita. And Mahabharata, the whole thing is about Varnashram. All the Vedic literature is about Varnashram. So we'd have to choose something else. You know? I don't know. What, Magna Carta or something? International, what is it? Bill of Rights or something?
The Seven Habits of...
Seven Habits. Something we have to get as an authority. Okay?
Yeah.
And we should end here.
Narrow is the way that leads to salvation. Wide is the path that leads to destruction.
Yes, very good.
Jesus was cool.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he was good.
Stairway to heaven and highway to hell. says something about the expected traffic on each route.
There's no great song about the stairwell to heaven. Yeah, no, nothing catchy at least, right?
No, the Stairway to Heaven is Leprechaun
music. Oh, Leprechaun music, okay. Yeah. Yeah. More of a niche kind of one.
Yeah, they even have the pan flute.
The pan flute, yeah. That also works. That means if you don't have an ocarina, just for knowledge sake, if you don't have an ocarina, you can replace it with pan pipes. That is bona fide.
Good to know.
Like that, because they're both natural. You know, one's earth, one's bamboo. You know, so it works. Or a zither. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Jai Gaura Premadi.